Hey guys, welcome to Game Chat, the video game book club on the internets. This is for September the 24th, 2019, where we are talking about The Fall, Part 2, Unbound. This is our second week of the chat. So for those listening, if you missed the first week and haven't heard that yet, check it out over at thegamechat.net and you can listen to it there. Which you probably saw when you were listening to this one. Anyways, this game was released back in February of 2018 by published and developed by Over the Moon. It's available on PC, Mac, Switch, Xbox One, and PS4. So basically anything current. Yeah, so we always start out with an intro question and intro so you guys know who you're listening to. And it always has to do with our game. So this week, our intro question is, like the one and listening to classical music, because he listens to classical music to get centered, hashtag centered, what is your go-to thing for centering yourself? It can be music, an activity, a TV show. And I'm thinking about centering like more like, you know, to maybe relax. It can be relaxed or to focus. It's kind of like up in the air what you want it to mean. Starting at the top.
All right. This is Franco. And you would call it centering / anxiety distraction. I was thinking I would call it YouTube music videos, falling down that rabbit hole.
Wow. You're brave. You're very brave.
Well, you know, it's a good way to all of a sudden look up and see like, an hour and a half has gone by, you know.
Have you ever watched any of the literal music videos? Those are gems.
Like from the 80s and stuff, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Next.
Oh, that's me.
Yes.
This is Jonathan. I guess... yes, one of the ways, I mean, I guess I just listening to music. Generally I find, is it Avicii? Is that
A-V-I-C-I-I,
you know, the DJ with his music.
Yes.
I like that centers me in like movie soundtracks, like John Williams, that kind of like music.
Nice.
Like center me. Actually, some classical music will center me.
Mm-hmm.
What in the game? What one listens to? Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. I've always loved that one. So,
yes.
So I support his choice.
I can play that one on the piano.
Nice.
Anyways. Next.
Hi, this is Kevin, and I guess listen to music.
Very cool. Like, what type of music?
Kind of really depends on what I'm feeling.
Sure. Okay. So, next.
This is Chris, and I guess it depends on time of day, mood, or whatever. Like if I'm driving to work or driving home or something like that, usually either radio or music. And again, depending on mood, either techno or rock or whatever. But when I'm at home, I usually watch like random YouTube videos that can range anywhere between making stuff that could be just about anything to like hacking video game consoles and just other like really random stuff. Like it's weird because YouTube started recommending it to me. And I don't know why I started clicking and watching it, but
oh boy.
And I don't even know why people record it, but people getting haircuts.
Oh, wow.
It's really random, and it's extremely relaxing for some reason.
No, I can feel that. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Cool. This is Steph. And yeah, I guess it does kind of depend. I honestly drawing is one of them. Or scribbling if I'm not in front of my stylus and computer or whatever. I'll do little doodles. Of course, I kind of want to say playing video games sometimes. Most of the time, I always feel very kind of centered whenever I play video games. Even if it's even a stressful game. And then of course listening to music, which could be anything. Usually I think one thing that really centers me is listening to 80s and 90s, maybe some 70s, some of the more kind of not current stuff. Current stuff, I'm just oh, okay, cool. Or something very kind of there's different ones. Anyways, awesome. Well, thanks, guys. And again, we are talking about The Fall Part 2, Unbound by Over the Moon. So I guess we'll just jump right into this. I'm saying I'm a lot. I apologize. I have no idea why. So the mechanics of the game, how did you guys, did you guys find anything more challenging with the second half of the game than you did with the first? I know you had a few more fights thrown in there, a few more fisty fights. You also had a few more prolongated shooty-shoot fights.
Technical terms,
guys. Technical terms.
Boom, boom.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So how did you guys feel about these combat sequences in the second half of the game?
So here's the confusing thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if for some reason, because I was playing on quote unquote easy mode, mm-hmm. that the game either kicked into easy mode at this point, or the game just got easy at this point, because the shooting fights got extremely easy, where there was either one of the little fuzzy black clouds.
Virus.
There was one fight where I got kicked out of, it was either the one or the butler, and I hit the R2 button as soon as I got kicked out, and I had already, it was already auto-aimed, and as soon as I got kicked out, I hit R2, and it killed the virus immediately.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, is there another one coming out, or was that it?
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So I went back in, and then that was it. The punching fights were a lot easier. Mm. And I don't know if it was because I was getting used to it, or if it was just, I don't know. It was hard to gauge it. I don't know. I think there was one or two times where I had died in the punching fights, but it seemed a lot easier.
Yeah. I feel like with the punching combat, that it seemed to have less variation. Or at least that I noticed, it seemed to have less red guys and blue guys. And it seemed to have just more, especially in one that I thought of, one that I'm thinking about particularly, and I can't remember in which part of the second half it was in, but it was, I kept expecting for the red guys to show up and the blue guys to show up, but it was only Of course, I had it on easy as well, but it was only just the regular guys that just came at you.
The green guys were screwing me up, though, because there would be like one or two green guys, and there would be like a white or a red or a blue guy like coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like keeping an eye on them, but I'm also like trying to fight the green guy. And then with the green guy, you punch them once and then they would like switch.
Yes.
And then try and punch them again and they would switch again. So I would lose who was who.
Yes.
And then I'm just hitting the buttons trying to figure out which one I am. And then I'd end up dying at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one where, was it the green guys that matched you? There was one where you were fighting just ones that look exactly like yourself. Yeah, and
the green guys were basically supposed to be you. And like, so they could both at the same time, they would have the same abilities as the blue and red ones together. Mm. So like, you had to hit them twice, but they could also dodge you.
Yeah. Yeah, those were a bit harder. Yeah.
Those are the peak enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had trouble with the last shooting combat. That was like the main boss. Of course, I think I said that in our Discord chat. Was that like I kept going. I kind of forgot about it until like today. So I actually. Because I just had that to go. I was just on that last thing. So I thought, well, there can't be too much after this. So I just watched a video and there wasn't. But I did
pick up on that you had to switch the different perspectives.
Yeah.
Through.
Yeah, there was a lot you had to insinuate.
Yeah, I
got the switching perspectives, but it just felt endless to me. And I was just like, come on. And I kept dying too. Like,
oh.
Even on easy.
Could you not figure out what to do?
No, I could figure out what to do. I just kept dying.
Oh, yeah. I was playing on normal, and I got... At first, I didn't figure out what I had to do, and then I think it got a little bit easier since I kept dying, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or I just might have had some good RNG that... or figured out. How to fight well enough, because running out of energy was basically my downfall for dying a lot during this whole section. Especially died a lot during I don't remember if it was the one or the companion where you had to go and I think it was the companion where there was a huge amount of virus you had to fight off. When you went into the different ports.
Either the companion or the butler. In the butler, you had the encryptions. The companion was you had the emotions.
The two different computers that you had to open up, both of them had a really large amount of virus come out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up getting killed a lot during that. So it took me a little while.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Let's go say stuff. I benefited from your pain, Steph. I saw the Discord thing and then I got to the end, and then everybody's gonna hate me. 4 kills, and that was it. Bingo, done.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like kill, change perspective, bing bing bing, kill, change perspective, bing bing bing, kill, change perspective.
Yeah, I think I wasn't understanding the whole virus bar at the bottom, and I think that was another thing. Was that like? Yeah. Because I noticed it kept going up and down, but I was like, I don't understand what I'm doing in order to get that down or what I'm doing to get that up. Because it kept going back and forth, and because it wasn't explained. Nothing. Right. I mean, and that's a little frustrating to me.
Well, it was a little bit of visual. Because like once you get the fact that you basically have to switch before the thing goes and starts.
I never got that fact. I never caught on to that.
It was very obtuse. Yeah.
There was no, unless you just happenstanced it.
For me, I didn't die at all. My problem was I kept playing, and then after about 20 minutes, I was like, no boss fight is supposed to last 20 minutes when the game is like only 6 hours. You know, it's like, I was like, something's not right. And then I found out after Googling it, which I should have just went into Discord chat because you guys were talking about it. But but I was using, you know, you get the virus. If you like absorb the virus attacks and you could do the one shot kills, I was doing that. And so I was like one shotting everything. And that's something the game doesn't tell you. But because, you know, you only got that power because you were being evil Arid, you know, which we'll talk about. Like, I mean, so it's like you couldn't use that because then it would that's basically because like you're using the viruses. Like in retrospect, story wise, I could see why they did that decision, but I wish like they didn't tell you that. And so once I realized, oh, I can't do that attack, it was like with Frank, I beat it in like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot you had to just like kind of figure out.
Guess at, yeah.
I mean, looking at it now, it's like story wise, it's like, okay, I get it, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So how often did you guys use, did anyone not use a walkthrough in the second half or?
I went and used a walkthrough simply for time constraints, for figuring out what to do with, because I started going in and doing the stuff yesterday, but then I didn't end up having enough time, so I ended up using a guide for getting through stuff with the companion stuff. Yeah. I figured out some of it on my own, but for the most part, I used a guy just to get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I used a guide out of necessity.
Yeah, I mostly for the butler, because there's so many things to click on with the butler. And
go ahead.
They really should have, just in my humble opinion, had a better way of indicating what perspective you were in. It got confusing. Like I would click on a whole bunch of things and then, oh, maybe
it took me until the very end to actually notice that there's text like before what you're looking at. Like it says like self, other,
I didn't
whatever.
Even notice that.
Exactly.
Exactly. Oops.
Exactly. What? But no, yeah, I had trouble. Yeah. With that, with the butler, with the companion thing, towards the end with the companion, actually, honestly, did I not have any trouble with anyone? At least all of them, I had to look at a guide for at least one part.
Yes.
Like the one it was on the train, because like that was, oh. And then for the companion, it was most parts, because I just could not. I couldn't get like the different perspective. I just didn't understand. I didn't understand like the different perspectives and like that you were supposed to go from one to the other and still click on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like it didn't. And I only caught onto that towards the end because like I was following a guide pretty much most of the time. And I was like, oh, well that. But it was again by that time it was the end of the game. Yeah, I just had a rough time.
Yeah,
Jonathan, you were going to... Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I started using a walkthrough, and then when I started really getting into it, I was like, how would I know half of this stuff had not been using the walkthrough? Because it's like, how would I know to switch the perspective here and look at these things in this perspective, and then switch to this perspective and look at it this way, and then switch to the perspective that you're actually in and then look at it that way to then finally figure it out? And it's like, it's well, nice to kind of figure it out on your own. It's, I don't have 20 to 30 hours to devote just sitting there and clicking on every little thing and
trying all the permutations.
It got to the point where it's just, I need this so I can get along with it.
Yeah,
because it felt like there was no logic to those things. So it was like, it was just literally going through the permutations. You know, all right, do this perspective. Okay, that didn't work. All right, go to the other perspective. Going through the laundry list of all the items that you can interact with.
I felt like there was logic to what the different perspectives did.
Yeah, it made
sense. You just kind of think about it.
Yeah, but it was just
like one of them, like the butler was very objective and routine. The one was very like,
but who would have thought to use a perspective on a locker and then switch the perspective and then use the locker again? And or use a perspective on the computer.
Yeah.
And which is, so it's like,
yeah. You
know, yeah.
Yeah. I think like they're like the bigger, they're like some of the bigger clues and stuff. Like there was definite logic to it. Like I know, like when you were the butler and you had to prove the butler had emotion, that I was like, oh, I'm going to need the, I was like, okay, at some point I'm going to use the companion's perspective because she's the emotional one on. And then I was like, and she's going to definitely be, I'm going to use the companion in the baby room. Like I knew that. It's like, but it's like the little steps that you have to do in between that get lost. And, you know, I used a guide just from the get-go because, well, one, I wasn't in last week's chat because I hadn't even started the game. I haven't even finished Fall number one. So over the weekend, I played Fall 1 and Part 2, and I just used a guide because I wanted to just get through it. And with these kinds of games, I've said it before in past chats, like the point and click, you know, everything in your item territory, like anything in your items can be clicked on for anything, but they may or may not work. Those games drive me crazy. So I always just, you know, unless it's something like Pillars of the Earth, I didn't do that. But like things like Siberia and like, you know, when I, what was it? Longest dream journey, whatever that, but you know, it's like I just knew from the moment it booted up, I'm like, I'm reading a guide with this, and so
yeah,
I had no concern with or feeling guilty with using a guide at all. And I mean, I did do some like puzzles on my own, but yeah, I did use a guide, and it's like a lot of the time I would know the solution, but it was just the sequential order you had to do things. Like, like when you were the companion and you had to use, I believe the one's perspective to like, to convince her to like leave the place.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to like, you had that counter of like everything is fine counter. And if you like, you have to do that in a very specific order. You have to go in the hallway, observe the hallway, then go to the thing, to the in the vat of acid, and then go look at the lady, and then go look at the poster, and then go apologize to the dude. And, but it's like, if you don't do it in that exact order,
it doesn't work.
It won't work. Yeah. And it was, that was one of the things that's like, okay, that I don't know how I would have known that. I mean, but also it's one of those things that I didn't realize how like strange all that was, because I was like using a guide from the get-go.
Yeah.
That it wasn't until afterwards that I like kind of like see you guys chatting in the Discord and like talking and chatting, and was like, oh yeah, I guess some of these don't make sense. You know, I had removed myself from it.
It's really interesting in that, that part especially, because I was looking at a guide at that time, and I read that, and I was like, okay, so I have to go to these three places. Well, I'm already in this room. Let me go ahead and do this. And so I was doing all three things, but not in the right order. And so it didn't register. And then I was like, I kept confusing my, you know, I kept like, you know, and I wasn't understanding the whole, like, because you look at more things, because like you have to look, you look at the different things and her empathy level goes, or no, there's something,
that,
there's a meter.
Everything is fine counter.
Oh yeah. Is fine counter that goes up. I didn't realize that if you look at, I was looking at all the wrong things. Like, even though Astra was telling her, like, you know, like it seemed like she would get something out of it, the everything fine counter, like, I wasn't even noticing that was even going up, or even if it was a bad thing that it was going up, or if it should be going down. I didn't know, because it's really interesting, because like, it, what they're asking you to do, like, the tasks in the game aren't that complicated, but they've somehow made them in a way that they're overcomplicated. Like, just in like how you have to go about approaching them. It's really interesting. I personally just, again, like I got a little frustrated with Forest puzzles and like the logic behind everything, because again, like as Kevin said, sure, there is logic, but like it was so deep rooted that you had to like take it would like, I just don't, I think there's a niche for this game. There are people out there that will like sitting there for like 3 hours trying to decide what to do in this one room. But there's a lot of gamers out there that just don't have that kind of time and aren't going to. Especially for a game that possibly might not have a big payoff, like say, you know, a more expansive game would.
I was reading an article about Death Stranding.
Oh yeah,
the new game that's coming out by Hideo Kojima.
Mm-hmm.
Which looks like a massively epic game. And one of like the biggest like news pieces that have come out so far about that is that there is going to be a stupid, easy difficulty on the game, which is basically for the people that want to just enjoy the story.
Wow, interesting.
And it's like, I commend them for doing that, because there are plenty of people now that want to play a game for the fact that they want to just enjoy the story, and they don't have countless hours to spend to put into like a 80 hour game anymore.
Yeah.
Which after hearing that makes me want to like go out and buy that game even more, knowing that there's going to be that mode there that I can just go in, set it to that, play it, and then just sit back and really kind of enjoy it.
Yeah. And be offered a more immersive experience than if you were like watching a TV series, you know, a movie or whatever.
Because it's like, yeah, I understand that you know, there can be a combat sequence here and there, but when I'm trying to enjoy a story mm-hmm. and I'm stuck at this one part for 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I can't get past it.
Yeah.
That's going to cause me to like put the game away and possibly never pick it up again.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think like you look at games like even like I've been watching a playthrough of Detroit Become Human recently. And like if you like, you know, and we for this listening, you know, we've played it. So you can check out a chat on that from us. But like you look at a game like that, like that's an extremely well done game and a very extremely immersive story. But it's not hard. You're basically just making decisions and hitting buttons. You know, so it you can still have an interesting, fascinating, and immersive game experience without needing to throw countless puzzles in there. And you need to you need to figure out how to get out of this room all the like consistently. And I think there's just like I wouldn't feel strongly about it if there was only like a few instances of it in this game, but like there are so many instances where I'm just like, I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have a guide, I would be screwed. Like if I didn't have a guide, I would have stopped playing this game about 20 minutes in.
And I think that this game kind of, I don't want to say suffers, but it kind of has the same thing that The Longest Journey. What was the second one called?
It was the Dreamfall. The Longest Journey was the second one.
Where it's like the publisher was demanding that they put in some sort of combat mechanic.
Mm.
And it seems like that seems to be the newest trend now with like point and click type adventure games
mm-hmm.
where people are trying to put in like a combat mechanic to it. And it's like, it doesn't really need it.
Yeah.
If your puzzles are strong enough and your story is strong enough,
mm-hmm.
just don't put that in there, because it's like you're adding one more mechanic that just overly complicates and frustrates everything.
Yeah.
So
your game doesn't have to have everything. It just has to have, you know, enough of the things that make it the type of game it is.
Yeah.
That's the I like the combat personally,
yeah.
But I think I'm the only one.
I liked the combat, and I also felt fit for the story for it. And considering that this is basically, for the most part, a one man team, I got the like what. Because he wanted to have, or at least it seems like it's kind of like you have your military bot, you have your butler bot, and you have your companion bot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one who like I played the first and second one back to back. You know, it was interesting. Like, I guess I kind of like the combat because it was more just action-y. Like, you can lock on and just shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my main frustrations with the combat in the first game was it made you, like, you had to take time to line up the shot to get the headshot. Mm-hmm. And you had to, like, be quick, and you had that stealth thing where you could go up behind them when they weren't facing you, and you could like rip out their spine or whatever. And so it's like, I guess the combat in this one, it was like, it was just like a little more actiony. And, but I do see like, I feel like part two is trying to be a little more like, I get the feeling that the guess the cyber world, the data world inside Aerith's head, like you could tell that they wanted it to feel like a Metroidvania kind of game, like a Super Metroid. It
totally wasn't at all.
Yeah, but like, you know, because you had to backtrack, you had to, like, I think a map of the network would have been extremely useful.
Oh yeah,
isn't a Metroidvania the whole point? One of the whole purposes of it is exploring the whole entire map.
Yeah, yeah, but they give you a map to look at.
Oh yeah,
so you could see where you've been. That's what I'm saying.
If they did that in like the original
in Super Metroid, the one that everyone points to, it did have a map. The original Metroid, which people don't talk about, did not have a map. That's why no one talks about the original Metroid. Yeah, no. If there's only one Metroid, everyone will tell you it's Super Metroid.
Or Metroid Prime.
I did like the quick
That's different.
Later on.
Yeah.
What was that?
The quick travel.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that helped.
Yeah, at the second half, yeah, that made it a lot. Yeah, going back to what we're talking about, like how, you know, game Death Stranding, including a super easy mode and everything, I guess that's why my outlook towards this game is different, because, like I said, how I went in knowing, having no problems with the guide, and just going in with the guide at my side already, that in my, I guess for me, that's like, that was the equivalent of just going in with a super easy mode. Whereas with you guys, it was more of you were playing a certain difficulty and you were forced to lower it, which I know I've played games that force you to lower a difficulty when you lose. I abhor those games.
Well, I started easy and I was still having trouble at that.
Yeah, me too.
First.
Yeah.
Major fight that took me about 25 minutes to get past. That was like having me almost contemplate just giving up the game altogether.
Same.
Is that the one fight? The fist fights?
Yeah, that was the first like long one fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, like that's something that my brain just works differently, apparently, because I was telling this to Steph the other night, just how during that combat sequence, I never had any problem with one stuff because my brain didn't treat it like a fighting game. My brain treated it as a rhythm game, which is how you need to play it, I've realized now. Like, it was just like, okay, this guy's come up on the left. And so it's like left, right, left, left, right. Like, it was like my brain went into like DDR mode.
I was talking to Jonathan about this last night, and he was like, I didn't have any problems with the fighting combat.
I actually got the hang of it too.
And I mean, I did too eventually, but that first fight again almost made me quit the game. But yeah, and he told me, he was like, yeah, I thought about it as a rhythm game. I was like, that's why, because like I was telling him, like I said this last week, I was waiting for the fight for the punch animation to stop before I went to another punch, which immediately just got me blasted every time. But once I realized that you just hit the button whenever they're coming towards you, no matter if you're still in like punching a person or not, then that's what works. So way to go. Way to go. So really quick. So like, what did you guys, I don't think it mattered, but what did you guys choose for Aerith's new rule at the beginning of the game when she had to get rid of her old rule of save yourself, which I have opinions about, but what did you choose as your new rule? You had either like stop Joseph's, save those I've endangered, or redeem myself.
I chose stop Joseph because I thought everybody would choose the other one.
Did you have any interaction with Joseph's in the second half?
No, I did not.
That's sad.
Aside from hearing him over the intercom, I think it just kind of changed some of the storyline dialogue.
So. Yeah. What did everyone else choose?
I did save those I've endangered.
Me too. Yeah.
Me too.
Yep, me three. That's unanimous.
Four.
Except for Kevin.
Except for Kevin. Kevin, way to go, though. That was a nice take for the team.
Yeah, took one for the team.
Like, what is everybody else going to choose? Because it makes sense for some of us to choose something else.
Yeah, for sure. I wish
would be another one that would be a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I kind of wish it made, but I understand. Like, you know, smaller games, it's hard to kind of branch out into like all kinds of different like alternatives. So I'm not too upset about that. But
I was looking through the walkthrough and it didn't really mention or make any weight onto what your decision was on this question. So it made it sound like it had no weight as to what you chose. So I was like, well, I'll just pick whatever. So
Well, I mean, if they wanted you to feel that like you're the player's choice, kind of like, I don't want to say it like it sounds mean, where it's like if they wanted you to think that player choice mattered, which sound, like I said, that sounds mean, but like throughout the game, it's like they give you the choice of like, are you going to be mean to this robot or are you going to try to understand them? And anytime you do the good choice, Erin will have her like brain fritz screaming moment and then delete that option. So you have to do the bad option.
Yeah.
For sure. So it's like, so by the time I got to this point, it's like I didn't expect anything to be different because, like, that's just how. I mean, why? It's like nothing in this game has showed me yet that it's like it's telling the story it wants to tell, which is fine. But it's kind of like, I mean,
yeah.
And it's like even the choice, the fake option of the choice. It's like I understand why they did that because it's showing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her corruption by the virus and everything. But yeah.
Well, at least the choices. I feel like the choices at least mattered a little bit more than a Telltale game. But
no.
I don't think so.
The later Telltale game.
Yeah, but
so do you guys so with Erid going back and, well, you know, first like revisiting her memories at the first part of the second half, you know, she revisits her memories of like, you know, of the butler, the one and the companion, and kind of like analyzes, you know, whether her choices were right with them. You know, and then, you know, of course, as we all know, but for those listening, proceeds through the second half of the game to try and right her wrongs with each of them and to try and, like, because at first they're broke. She left them broken, pretty much all three of them. So to try and fix them, restore them, and to help them. Do you think it was too little too late? Did you feel and empathize, I guess, with that whole process of her? Like, did it seem like that she made up for her wrongs? Did it seem like that she redeemed herself? Or did it seem like just, you know, whatever?
Are you talking about like she redeemed herself in like the whole end?
Well, just in restoring them. Like, she could have left them broken. Oh, but the whole thing was that, like, she changed her rule of saving herself to saving them. Did she redeem herself?
Did it seem
believable?
Yeah. Yes, I would say so. And I would say even more because not only did she, like, bring them back to where they were, I think the one of the purposes of it was to show each companion the usefulness of the other perspectives of the other companions.
Mm-hmm.
Like the companion with fighting, with the one, the butler with emotions with the companion. And I forget what the butler, I guess the butler was perspectives were just on the
butler was routine schedule. Yes. That was his
perspective. Yeah. So I think, and they all, I think, showed that at the end of the game that they had learned from each other.
Yeah.
Especially when Arad goes offline for a bit.
Yeah, I think I think she was redeemed, but not like in a traditional like story, like in like if this was a human character, I might be more hesitant. But like this is like these are all robots like coming to consciousness, you know? Like and even when she's like helping them, like trying to fix them to how she's trying, she's not, so to speak, like she's not going in with like, I'm gonna give you the perspective to see new worlds and to open up your mind. Like, no, she's like just trying to figure out a way to work around the system to get them back to the way she found them.
Mm-hmm.
And then by doing that, she ends up opening up to the other perspectives. And like, even like with the companion, after she fixes the companion, the companion's all like, oh, I gotta go, you know, talk to the one who hurt me. And Arad doesn't get it. Like, you know, and when like companion like starts apologizing to the guy, and Arad's like, what are you talking about? It's like Arad's still not figures it out. And then like Arad figures it out, like in like she doesn't redeem herself by her actions. It's through just how she's trying to fix the companions that the companions are able to help her help redeem her. And like, you know, just in the companion, like even tells Arad, I forgive you kind of thing. And so like that, like take a step back from all the, you know, the crazy point and click crazy things. Like I really like that from like a story character point of view, and just how, you know, each character was broken and how they were able to get back to how they were and how they never really fully got back to what they were beforehand. Like the butler, he gets back into his routine and he starts like talking again, but it's like, he does so because he wants to stay true to his routine. He has no preconceived notions now that his masters are anything but just husks. And like one, he becomes one, but then he realizes that there, like there's still importance of the many, and the companion, you know, goes back to like wanting to help everybody, but then also realizes that she needs to also help herself, you know, and that she's not just a tool, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I liked the character progression that like kind of came out unintendedly through Arad's own progression. And I just thought it was very good and cool, just in the way that they're robots and how they became more sentient, more lifelike by the end, because they realize they are now all connecting each other's perspectives and now becoming, that's what made them more human and more conscious. Whereas like, I love Detroit Become Human, but that was one of the things I had problems with Detroit Become Human, is that they are perfect serving robots, and then unless something happens, and then they glitch out, and then they're basically human, you know, like in their minds.
Okay.
I'll
let you think that. Sure.
Oh, it's, okay, but no.
Well, David Cage is kind of not well, great writers.
Well,
so.
Well, I'm not talking about David Cage.
Oh, okay.
No, I.
Yep.
Wait, no. Stop. Going back to what I was saying, how the point, like, yes, Detroit had, like, there was, they had their emotional moments, you know, but it didn't show all the processes of, like, how a robot would come to those, I'll stop talking. I've made everyone mad.
No, you haven't made me mad, not by what you're saying.
She's mad at me.
Okay. But anyways, all that to say, I really like just how there was a thought process, like, in between how all these characters progressed and changed as, like, realistic-ish robots.
Mm-hmm.
Which, granted, I think I have that view because I kind of removed all the spaghetti mess of the mechanics and the point and clicks and
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, that's understandable. Maybe I should have played it that way. Yeah.
Notes for part three.
Yeah. So, like, one thing that, like, okay, and, like, so going with the, we won't go through each of the stories, but just because of time, but, like, is there anything with, like, you know, the sequences with the one, the sequences with the butler, the sequences with the companion that you would like to talk about? I will start. The butler sequences, I don't understand why his masters were talking all of a sudden.
Oh. He was talking for them.
But why did that start in the second part and wasn't in the first half?
It was in the first half. It started when he went into the basement.
Yeah, when it started when he saw the master get sit down the incinerator chute.
Yeah.
That was when, like,
he was projecting.
I would understand if, like, it was because he was, like, broken and because, like, he was, like, you know, kind of fritzing out. But then it even was still happening, I think, after he started becoming, like, after he started realizing.
He was projecting.
No, the moment he got his voice back, the moment the butler started speaking for himself again, he stopped speaking for the...
Okay.
The butlers and the masters.
Oh, so weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was still kind of affected by the virus stuff, so he couldn't fully. But yeah, I it took me a little while to figure out that what was going on with that, with him talking with them, and then I started to realize, oh wait. Not just from, like, them telling you in the story, but also just listening to the voices, like, that sounds like a guy going and voicing the mission. So, like, oh, it's the butler doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to talk about with those three perspectives and, like, the sequences that you had with them that we haven't already covered?
I was slightly annoyed by the companion having such a small area compared to, like, butler and the one. Because the one, you have a whole train that you walk across. I am train. and, like, the butler, you have the house with two floors, which is a little bit annoying because walking up stair animations. But, like, the companion, you just had, like, the room you were in, and then, like, the it was basically just mainly the room that you were in. You did, like, a little bit in the brig. Yeah, but.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, you're going to say something?
sorry, excuse me. I don't know if you guys talked about this last week, but something that bothered me a little bit, just in like the world in general. Like I said, I played the first one and this one back to back. In the first one, it was almost like a pseudo horror game, like just in the way like it, you know, you saw the caretaker go in the background and like jump and things would happen and there was like evil grub worms and alien things and dead carcasses all over the place. And then you get into this world and there's still like, you could still tell like there's something weird in this world. Cause you know, now you're in a mansion and like, it's like the same warp, same planet. And like these like masters have been dead and they're mummified. And it's like, you're still like, ooh, what's happened here? And then you go into the one and it's like, oh, there's just an area of just these robots that are just out there and there's still no people. But then all of a sudden you're on the companion on the ship and there's real people and everything's fine. And then you find out how Arid actually fell onto that first planet. It was like, it was all just to train her in fear, how to program the virus in fear or whatever. And I'm still just like, why is there a planet of dead people and abandoned robots?
I don't think it's. I'm not sure if it's everyone on the planet that's actually dead.
I'm not sure
if the whole entire planet is the Domesticon thing, but at least the Domesticon does take up a large portion of the planet.
Well, okay, yeah, even saying like. But still,
but they're part of a whole. I forget what word, but essentially, they're part of like a whole entire like government, a giant government that has like space travel and stuff. It's like this is our robot house, planet, building or robot.
Well, yeah,
building planet.
Yes, I get that, but I'm just saying, but that's still like the master, the butler's master. It's like, we know he was someone high up with Domesticon, and like, there's like a whole story with him and his wife and a dead kid. And it's like, but they're all just like still dead in their clothes, sitting in their armchairs. And like, there's still like a lot of story that I was expecting to get told, and then it turned into, oh, Joseph's the guy you thought was in your body that you were saving in the first game. He's a bad guy and he has a virus and he's, yeah, it's like, it felt like it started telling a story I wasn't expecting.
Oh, yeah.
I've forgotten the twist of that game. Go ahead, Kevin.
Like, I guess it's kind of one of those, like, sort of usual kind of twists in a way where it's like, oh, the one person that I was going to try to save the whole entire time turned out to be a complete jerk.
I kind of wish there was more about Joseph's in the second half of this second game. I mean, but I'm guessing they might be saving that for the third one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the whole entire taking down Joseph for part three.
Yeah.
When we have a bunch of sentient robots helping us.
Sure.
I found like the, I don't think I ended up finding all of the logs. And I don't know if any of the logs, the full entire logs even help to explain, but I got the idea or something that I guess something that they were, that the people on the planet, like the master and stuff, were doing was not what I guess the government and stuff wanted, so they just kind of forgot about them. But they also had separated them, kind of separated themselves on purpose, as the butler was talking about, and how they kind of actually wanted to eventually just end up living out in a small shack in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I don't know. It's just like, I feel like the first game was telling this big old like underground story about Domesticon and robots and then like they all went in disrepair and post-apocalyptic kind of thing. But then this game, it's like you got a little bit. They started teasing like more Domesticon stuff at the beginning with the butler, but then after the butler, it's like, that's it. Like all the other logs you find in the network and everything, it's all about Arid and like her division and her and like what she was created on. And and it was just like, it felt like they spent the first game like teasing this whole Domesticon thing, and then it's just dropped. And that's kind of what
they still talk about some of the stuff that Domesticon is doing, but I guess it's harder to I think it's also a little bit harder to develop fully what Domesticon is, considering the fact that they're all dead.
I can
see what you're saying, Jonathan. I mean, I didn't play them back to back, and that's probably why you're getting that sense. And we're not really like, you know, I can't quite remember because it's been like a year. But no, I can see what you're saying about that, because it did seem like that Domesticon had a huge presence. Kevin, what are you doing with your, it sounds like you're moving your microphone or?
Oh, it was probably something with my computer.
But yeah, it did feel like the Domesticon had a bigger presence in the first game and then was maybe mentioned a handful of times in this one. So, I get that. So, since we're getting pretty tight on time, so what did you... anything else that you want to discuss about the game that we haven't covered yet?
Mm-hmm.
Or what? Tell me what you would like to see in the third, since it's going to be a trilogy and they're coming out with a third one. What you would like to see the third game kind of cover? I mean, obviously, it's going to, for those listening, it spoiler, it ends with like the three, you know, everyone's together. The three hosts are together, the one, the companion, the butler, and they have, Arid's body, and they are just kind of like, you know, and they kind of look down at, and there's a bunch of different robots, androids gathering for, I'm guessing, what will be like an uprising or revolution. So who are also, you know, sentient of sorts. Yeah, and then like she and Arid says that she wants them to rebuild her. So what would you guys, I would like to see more something with Joseph's kind of tying that up and seeing him have his comeuppance, I think, as someone mentioned last week. I think that was you, Kevin.
Yep. I hope we get to see the companion beating up more people. Because that was pretty badass.
I'd like to see more allies. Maybe a few more new characters show up.
Yeah.
On the fight.
Yeah, it would be cool if they're the variation between robots. Like, I liked how both the one, the butler and the companion were all so different, but it's like, but I would like to see like a variation of droids that you get to like use and solve puzzles. Like, I don't think, or like, no, yeah, there was some, parts like with the butler where it's like, you know, the butler could like go into like the coffee maker and go into the vacuum robot. And the it's like, I would like to do more like I'm thinking like Star Wars droids. Like there's all sorts of different kinds of droids, you know, there's like the C-3PO's, there's the R2-D2's. It's like, I want Aerith to be able to like do like stealth takedowns by like turning into a garbage can or something, you know. It's like
Jonathan, there's only exists in the Star Wars universe. You realize that, right?
That there's sex robots. There can be garbage can robots. but like just like how the butler would go in and out of like electronic equipment to run it. It's like, I would like to see more of that kind of in like a stealth mechanic kind of way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can get behind that. Sure. Anything else?
This isn't related to that, but there is one thing I remembered from because I went and decided to go and look for some of the logs, and I ended up finding the one for Maria, which is the one dead human that you end up finding in the beginning of the first game that's mm-hmm. hung up on the cross. Mm-hmm. And her log was basically that she's was supposed to go and monitor Joseph's robot as it developed like more sentience or whatever, not knowing that Joseph was actually going to be using it to go and implant a virus and shackle all robots, where the Raven Division wanted to go and kind of give robots more artificial intelligence, sentience. And yeah. I felt kind of sorry for her because she ended up dying believing that Joseph's actually trying to do something good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she ended up dying by the evil caretaker robot for the first game and like crucifying her. I'm sorry, yes. Like that. I want to know more of like, why was that robot? Why did that robot go crazy and start crucifying people? That's sorry.
Because he didn't get his regular maintenance.
I don't see it happening, but I liked all the side characters. I loved like the just dialogue between the butler and the one. And the companion between Aerith and with each other. But part of me kind of wants it to kind of go back to mainly still just like I want it to still be focused on just Aerith, you know.
Yeah.
Doing stuff and not it be like now it's a team. You could always switch out between them, you know. For a given situation, you know, you have the party, you know, it's like, I liked this, like, I know it's going to be bigger and grander, like, the second one was bigger and grander than the first one, but it's like, I do feel like there's something special about that first one of just, you know, solving a mystery and, like, surviving kind of thing. But, yeah. I mean, I know this is, they're telling a different story than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I personally, I was a lot more emotionally invested in the first one than I really could have. I really wasn't in the second one. And that might be it. I also think that, like, personally, like, I was kind of turned off early in the game because I was, and I kind of covered this a little bit last week, and I was hoping it's going to get better in the second half, and it didn't. But I was kind of seeing like towards the beginning of it being a mission of like her saving herself because that was her goal and her like standing up for herself. And I thought, oh, well, this is an empowerment story. This is exciting. I'm excited for this empowerment story. And it wasn't that at all. So I, so yeah, I would love to see that too, Jonathan. But again, I don't think that's going to happen since they've kind of already introduced these three other characters. One of them who didn't even catch that Arid had a name until the very end. The one.
I mean,
that's because he's always focused on himself.
I mean, he is the one. I mean, that fit the character. That didn't bother me that much.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get into final scoring and final thoughts. And Chris did a great job of putting up a little list here. So I am first. Happy day. Yeah. I'm going to give this a 5. Mostly because of what I've said already. I just, again, the whole thing turned me off. I kind of felt that, I mean, Era did redeem herself some towards the end and in the latter half, but like, I kind of felt the first half, like I was hoping for an empowerment story and like her, but then like it almost to me kind of put the taste in my mouth of like empowerment as bad, because she kept going bad because of the virus. And it just, but then, and then like the only other female character was a sex robot who, yes, does regain, I guess, her freedom, but I don't know. There's just a lot there. And then like the combat, just stuff frustrated me, unfortunately. But again, the first one I loved. I liked the first one. I think that I was probably maybe one of the few that liked it the most. I don't know. But it's hard to remember. Yeah, so I'm going to give it a 5. And Jonathan, you're next.
Well. I mean, all the reasons I said before, just I guess the way my mindset was going into this and just the how I played it, you know, I just kind of like stepped back and absorbed it, I guess. And thankfully, really didn't have any frustrations with it. So I guess, I mean, I enjoyed the story. I mean, I do like the first one better, and I was like kind of surprised at how different this one was compared to the first one, playing them back to back. But overall, I kind of like the story that they were telling, and like just the progress, like the introduction, how they introduced these new characters and how they progressed. It just made sense to me as like far as like how robots would progress emotion wise. I like that. And I like the settings. I liked it. I do wish there's like a little more world building, I guess. And yeah, like I said, like we all agree that the puzzles could be a little clearer. I enjoyed it. It has its, you know, issues. But I guess I'm going to give it, I'll give it a 6.7.
Cool. Chris?
So, like I said, I enjoyed the story. I think the most frustrating thing was the combat. More of the punching than the shooting, although the shooting did get frustrating every once in a while. But not as bad as the punching, because it was just, for me, once I did start getting in the flow, you know, I would then get hit, and then, you know, you'd have to wait because it would cause you to pause for a second, and then you get hit again, and you'd have to pause, and then you start getting in the flow, and then you'd miss one button press and then get hit and then you're dead. It was just, it would have been nice to have some like energy refresh while you're fighting and hitting enemies so that doesn't happen, because mm-hmm. it's like you could be down to the very last enemy and then get hit and then have to start the whole thing all over again. So that was just adding even more frustration to the whole thing, even on the easy setting where it said that basically the description was that combat wasn't going to be a big part of this. So the other thing too is the interface was again annoying, because you had to keep turning like your flashlight on and you had to move yourself and hover your flashlight in the correct position in order to highlight the question mark.
Oh yeah.
Also, the really annoying thing too, especially playing on the PS4, was that, you know, you'd hit the cross button, not the X, the cross button.
Whatever.
I hate you. I hate you, Sony. Yeah. I hate you so much. It's the X button.
Yeah. Wait. No, do they actually call it the cross button?
They confirmed that it's the cross button.
No, Sony.
And the game won't call it the cross button, too.
Well, games will call it the cross button?
While you're playing it, it says hit the cross button.
It's an X!
I've only seen that for like the first Harry Potter game, which was on PlayStation. Well,
I feel like this is like one of those the Mandela effect thing, where it's like, I don't think I would have noticed that this game said press the cross button until like it turned into this big internet thing. Yeah. And now I'm like, the cross, but what? Wait, it's the Mandela effect where I'm like, wait, it's Baron Stain? Not Baron Stein?
No, that's not a Mandela effect. That's called different timelines, but that's a whole other discussion.
But so it's you know, the major issue that I was having was you'd hit the cross or the X button to interact, but to bring up the menu. But then I kept hitting the D-pad to move back and forth, because that's just where my brain would go.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't let you do that. You had to use the left joystick to do that. Where I don't, they should have just programmed it to like use the D-pad as well.
Well, at least you could use the D-pad in the menu. The first game, you couldn't use the D-pad at all in the first game. I was frustrated about that. Sorry.
Yeah, it was just a minor frustration there, because it's like I kept hitting the D-pad. I'm like, why is it not moving? And then I'm like, oh, I have to use the L, the left thumbstick. But yeah, other than that, other than the minor annoyances, and the combat system that just was really annoying, and I don't want to say overly complex, but more, things that I guess could have been explained a little better, like the end boss where you had to switch perspectives. Where it didn't say that at all and wasn't intuitive enough for you to, like, at least for me in your brain to, like, switch, like, oh, I need to switch between the perspectives, rather than have the big, huge virus just swing in and out and, like, I'm trying to shoot the thing and nothing's happening. So, so it's like with that, I don't know. It's like I wanted to give it a high score, but because of like the issues and annoyances, like I'd have to give it about a 7.
Okay.
Can I make my score higher?
If you want to make it too late? Higher. No, you can make it higher, sure.
Okay.
If you think it deserves higher, yes.
Yeah, I just, yeah, because I feel don't like I enjoyed it higher, like more than what I gave it.
Okay.
So can I make it a 7.7 rather than a 6.7?
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Sure.
Sorry.
You're fine. That 1 point isn't going to throw things off too much. So, all right, Kevin?
I liked it. The second half of the game, I probably would have enjoyed the game a little bit more if I had time to play it.
If you had all time, okay.
If I had a little bit more time to play it, but I've been busy with everything, so I had to resort to using a guide and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed the logs and reading. It's a little bit heavy with all the talk of artificial intelligence and everything. So you have to kind of read through it a couple times. There are some parts that were problematic with writing and some of the things that happen, mostly with the companion. But I enjoyed the what it brought with robots and artificial intelligence gaining their sentience. I got used to the combat. It frustrated me a little bit. And I feel like I got a fuller experience by playing it on normal, even though I died a decent amount. I'd give it a 9.
Okay. All right. And Frank, for this listening, Frank had to leave early, but he left his score and his final thoughts. He's scoring it a 7.25. Main minuses being the combat punching mechanic and the obtuseness of some of the puzzles. Didn't feel guilty about using a walkthrough. Ending was okay. Thanks, Frank. So I will compile those scores together and put them up on the internet as well as our Discord. Also, next week on October the 1st, we will be discussing three short games again. So Paper Bark, which is on Steam and iOS, Paratopic, which is on Steam, and Black Room, which is a browser game. If you go to thegamechat.net, the link is there on our schedule for the game. Thank you, Chris, for doing that. It's on itch.io. And so a quick description of Paper Bark. Paper Bark is a charming game that tells a beautiful short story of a wombat, the bush, and a very hot Australian summer. Black Room is, I did Black Room twice. Anyways, yeah, Black Room is a browser-based narrative game about falling asleep while on your computer on the internet. You play as an insomniac on the verge of sleep, moving through shifting states of consciousness, and it was conceived as a feminist dungeon crawler. So I am psyched about that one.
Stop calling me out, game, for being insomniac.
I think the other one is that I had on here is probably Paratopic. Smuggle contraband VHS tapes across the border, discover the remnants of illicit industry, prepare for an assassination. This is Paratopic, an atmospheric retro 3D horror adventure through a cursed fever dream.
What?
Wow, we have quite the ride this week, guys. So maybe play like Paratopic and Black Room first, and then like chill out with Paper Bark because it's about a wombat.
How did we get from two games about being insomniac and like dark horror stuff, and then wombat?
You know, it's a nice little refresher. So as I said, play the other two games first, and then play the wombat game. And that should be okay. You might be okay. Our October month chat is on October the 15th, which is Layers of Fear 2. It's about, well, how long it takes to beat says it's about an 8 or 9 hour game. I think before I've been saying it's like 15 hours, but it's shorter. So you should be A-okay. And also, if you're participating in the Dragon Age Inquisition chat, as always, keep playing that. Want more game chat? You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Podcast under The Game Chat for all past and current shows. Keep up to date on what's going on by following us on Twitter at @the_game_chat and also on Facebook under The Game Chat. Leave us a review or a question or a topic for a current game, and we might read it on the show. Email us those at chatwithus@thegamechat.net, or you can join in on the chat at jointhechat@thegamechat.net, or you can also send us amazing, adorable pictures of dogs at notenoughdogs@thegamechat.net. Come back next week where we're chatting about, again, those three smaller games, Paperbark, Black Room, and Paratopic. So until next Tuesday, thanks for listening, and I'll chat at you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.